There's air conditioning.
Like amazing. Okay. Okay, it's going. Okay, so let me want to sit over here so you'll keep track of things. Okay, so let's continue. I just wanted to go over the last paragraph in the Ramban just to make sure that. Can someone explain? We started to, but I don't know if we finished everything in the paragraph. Can someone tell me what the Ramban is saying in this last paragraph? Hold on one second. Okay, who wants to start? Okay. Naomi, you want to start?
Sure. So
I guessed right then. What is the rump?
So we were saying that you might think that if you leave the bone inside of the shell, then you might think there's a problem of chatzitza.
Yeah.
That if you bore a hole through the bone, that it won't be yotze because the bone is closest between the shell. But we said that's not an issue, and it's still yotze because it went through the shell, and therefore that you don't even throw out the hamina of it being shnei shofros because the bone.
Oh, before you get to shnei shofros, the Gemara thought of throwing it out not because of that. The Gemara wanted to throw it out because of what? It's a chatzitza.
That's what I said.
I thought you said shnei shofros.
Oh, I said no. I said first that it's not an issue of chatzitza. Then I started saying it's not an issue at all.
Okay, fine. So before you get to the last point, so is that clear to everyone that since the Gemara, this was the Gemara later on, since the Gemara said that the havamina of leaving the bone in and just boring a hole through the bone, the havamina is that maybe it should be possible because the bone is a chatzitza. Even though you put a hole through it, that maybe there's still the bone, there's still a chatzitza between the pathway through which the sound is traveling and the outer shell, that the bone, the remainder of the bone, the shell of the bone is a chatzitza between the sounds and the outer shell. Kamash Malan, it's not a chatzitza. Now, it could be the reason why it's not a chatzitza is because it's min b'mino. It's of the same type. They're all made of the same bone material. So what is the Ramban? Just repeat again, Naomi, what you said. So what is the point that the Ramban sees from that Gemara?
That really the bone is not considered anything at all, and therefore wouldn't be a problem. Is that shnei shofros?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a problem of shnei shofros?
Don't get the shnei shofros yet. It wouldn't be a problem of what?
Of chatzitza.
Oh, so therefore, the bone itself is not what?
It's not potted.
Yeah, so, no, the bone itself could never be a kosher shofar.
Right.
It can never be. And the only havamina was that maybe it should be a chatzitza between the sounds, the created sounds, and the real shofar, which is the shell. So kamash malan, that we don't view this bone as a chatzitza. That's all. But the bone itself, was there ever a havamina to think that you could be yotze the kol shofar with a bone? Like Lamashla, if they removed the bone, as the Ramban says, and just bore a hole through the bone and blew the bone, would anybody ever think that you're yotze? So the Ramban says, of course not. That was never the havamina. Because if that were the havamina of the Gemara, then the Gemara shouldn't have said that maybe it's a chatzitza. Why not say that? Well, that's the point then. So what would be, now you can, before you get to the shnei shofros issue, if, let's say, one were to argue with the Ramban, you play devil's advocate and say, well, maybe the Ramban is wrong. Maybe if you bore a hole through a bone, you could be yotze. Maybe it would be a kosher shofar. And the reason why, if that's the case, then, so what's the problem? So then maybe the issue then of what? That if you left the bone inside the shofar and you just bore a hole through it, so maybe the issue is what? That I might think that what?
They can do the same with the carrot.
Not only that, that. So then why would I think that maybe it should be pasul? Because it's Shnei Shofros. Maybe that's... Of course, the Ramban is rejecting that, because if that were true, then the Gemara said the wrong thing. Then why did the Gemara talk about Chatzitza? The Gemara should have said, I might think that maybe it should be pasul because somehow you might think that you're making the sound using two shofros, and you can only use one shofar. So then, Ha'ikra Chasim and Asefer, the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara said the Havamina was that maybe there's a Chatzitza. So that's why the bone itself is worthless as a shofar. And the only issue was, maybe it represents a Chatzitza. That's all the issue was. Now, what did the Ramban mean when he said, and also, what is the Ramban when he says, the law have the name of Mimme and Chotzes, El Kevin the Mechuber, Chadhu. Now, if the Havamina was that it's Shnei Shofros, then what should the Gemara, and then the Kamash Malon would be what? Now, so if you were taking that erroneous pshat, which the Ramban thinks is wrong, and say that the Havamina is that maybe it's Shnei Shofros, so what would be the Kamash Malon? That it's not Shnei Shofros. So that's what the Gemara should have said. Kamash Malon, that it's one Cheftza. So can somebody then tell me what the next sentence is, like the last 2.5 lines, where he says, Va'od, and tell me even how to read it. She'ein zachruso v'gildo shol keren echad. Now, what did you do here? I just wanted someone to read it and tell me what it means.
Can I ask about the beginning?
Oh, okay.
The Mahu Datima seems to say that the min bimino would be a reason to make it pasul, mm-hmm. not a justification.
No, that even though it's min bimino, it would still be a chatzitza, I thought.
Mahu Datima, even though min bimino?
No, the min bimino is still chatzitz. I mean, okay. If it's a min b'sheino mino, I would think it's more of a reason that it should be chatzitz.
Okay.
So, what does this last line then mean? Vo'od she'ein zachruso v'gildol shol keren echad. Now, we have it that migilde is in parenthesis, which usually means to exclude. And then we have ukegilde para l'rabbanan. What's he talking about? Elevadai mishum she'ein hechsher tekiya b'zachrushu etzem ba'alma. Kamar hachi, the lo havi shofar b'sof shofar, the zachros lav shofar hu. V'adin l'karnayim, she'enem chalulim, kagon shal tzvi, de psum l'yolom. What is he talking about when he says she'en, u'kegilde para l'rabbanon? Who knows? Yes? That's right.
We shouldn't think that we here have a gon and a shofar as two kind of layers of a shofar, and it would be puzzle for that reason, but rather the bone is not a shofar at all.
So what does it mean, she'ein zachrus of the gildol shel keren echad?
So they're not, it's not like they're attached in, it's not like there are two shofros that are attached into one, like the layers of the shofar of a cow.
So the layers of the cow are considered one or separate?
Well, I mean, according to Rabbi Yossi, they're considered one, and according to Rabbanan, they're considered separate.
Yeah, so it is like... Okay, let me repeat it. So, she'ein zachruso v'gildol shel keren echad, the bone that's inside a shofar, together with the shell, you can't... No, if you were to learn that the Havamina was that it's two shofros, and then what would be the Kamash Malon?
One.
That it's one. It's just not true. It's not true that what? To say that the bone together with the shell is like one unit? They're not one unit. He says, She'ein zachruso v'gildol shel keren, pause, echad, right? It's not one. It's not one thing. Ukegilde para l'rabbanon. What does that mean? It would be no different than the layers that the Rabban, according to Abaye, that the Rabbanon said existed in the horn of a parah, and that's why he postled it, because it was several shofros. So certainly in a regular shofar that has a bone in it, it's not one unit, it's several units. Just like the gilde parah, according to the Rabbanon, are several units. layer on layer, which are viewed as separate units. And then he goes on to say, Elevadai, because there's no way that a Zachrus could ever be kosher, because it's just a bone. It doesn't have hollow, it wasn't made, it wasn't created with a hollow space. Therefore, it's not a shofar, therefore, it's nothing. Okay? Let's move on. Yeah, any questions?
Yeah. The Raman says, Aval b'tanayim shem etzem echad pshita dekasher. A little bit
above. Yeah, that's the Hav Amina.
Okay.
No, if you're going to say that what? That may be really a bone that you bore a hole of, it's kosher. And the only, and why then? So why would anybody ever think that if you leave the bone in a shofar and you bore a hole through it, why was there any Hav Amina to think that it should be possible? If after all, a bone is could be kosher in and of itself, so the Hav Amina would have been that it's shnei shofros. So he goes on to say that that can't be. Okay? Okay, let's, anything else before we move on? Okay, did everyone finish? I think most of you, I think, so, or almost got to the very end. Did you all finish what I had in the Mar Makomos?
Not the Rambam.
Well, the Rambam is like one line. I mean, even if you did the Ran, the Ran quoted the Rambam.
Yeah.
So, only thing there was a Rizid. So, I know there's a Rambam here.
This yeah, I have
there was. Okay, it's okay. Well, you'll be able to look it up. Let's now hear this Mishnah. I don't know if you, if people made a connection, but we'll soon see. So here the Mishnah says really things that are, at first glance, like you wouldn't have expected it. It says that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah was coming from the Ya'el, which Rashi says, again, I don't know, it's a chaya, that much I know. And if you saw the Tosus quoted from the Aruch, that thought it was not a chaya at all. But what was it? Which is a female sheep. Does everyone know what a ram is?
I don't know any of the distinctions.
What is a ram? Like an isle is a ram?
A male
sheep. A male sheep, yes. A ram? We don't know anything. Okay, yeah.
Like a bull and ox.
Well, I don't know. Okay, so a ram, an ayil, what we call an ayil, the Akedas Yitzchok, the ayil, that's a male sheep. A female sheep is, you know, is a kisba, or Rachel, Reish Cheslamet, I believe. So the Aruch thought that a Ya'el was a female sheep. Why do you think he thought that? This is a small thing, not a big deal, but just, you know, just, where did he get to out? Female sheep. Where did he come up with that? Why did he think that? Yes.
I mean, this is like a total guess, but like maybe because like this Kerbanos, like you say that like the reason that they're all the hemos and not.
I can't hear you. I just
that the reason that the mitzvah for Kerbanos is that they're all the hemos and not chayos is because Hashem like wanted to be nice to us and not make us go out and trap them in forest or whatever. So he assumed that the same kind of rule would apply, like that like the same sentiment or whatever of Hashem would apply that. Who would want to be nice to us.
So why not pick another male domesticated animal? Why did he think it was a female sheep?
Oh, no.
Yeah?
Because it's contrasted with the zechara.
That's right. Because what was the other type of instrument? The Mishnah said, shel zecharim. What did it say? Shel zecharim, right? Mm-hmm. Zecharim means male. Oh, I don't know. That could be. I don't know. But the thing is, though, it says b'shel zecharim. Now, b'shel zecharim in the Mishnah meant what? Besides the fact that it's male, but what animal was it? It was an isle. So he figured that this is the contrast. It's probably a female sheep.
Is it a female isle?
Yeah, but you wouldn't use the word isle. You're saying it's, like a it's like saying a female male.
Yeah, but a female
sheep. Yeah, whatever. So Tosus, though, rejects it. Tosus doesn't agree with it. He quotes from Psukim that we see that a Ya'el is really a wild animal. Fine. Now it says in the Mishnah, but it says that it's Pashut, which means it's straight. This horn of the Ya'el is straight. It's not curved at all. And then it says, Upiv mitzupe zahav, and they coat it. Now, we're not quite sure what piv means. Let's say the opening. They coated it with gold. You ever see?
It's in the Mikdash.
Okay, so now the Gemara later on points out that this all took place only in the Mikdash. Or Rashi tells you.
Yeah.
It's based on the Gemara later on that this is only unique for the Mikdash. And also the idea of Shtei Chatzotzos Min Atzdadin, this is all in the Mikdash. We don't do that. Shofar Marech V'Chatzotzos Makatzros. Isn't that right? Now, as you keep going through the Mishnah, it talks about Ta'anios. And so for Ta'anios, it's B'Shel Zecharim Kfufim. So we have so far a contrast between Rosh Hashanah and a Ta'anis. On Rosh Hashanah, it's Pashut. And on a Ta'anis, it's Kafuf. And then it says, Shava Hayova L'Rosh Hashanah L'Tkiyah V'Librachos, period. So what does that then say about Yom HaKippurim Shel Yovel? So what kind of an instrument did they use? Also Pashut, because it shoved to Rosh Hashanah L'Tkiyah. Brachos here means, that's, we said this the other day, Malchus, Achronos, and Shofros was also recited on Yom HaKippurim Shel Yovel. So in that way, so according to the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, putting aside Ta'anios, because, right, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, what type of instrument did they use? An instrument that was straight, Pashut. Isn't that right? And then Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, B'Rosh Hashanah B'Shel Zecharim, and Yovel is Ya'alim. But to say that differently, then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, on Rosh Hashanah, it's Kafuf. But Yovel, it's Pashut. Isn't that right? Now, how did Rashi, and it's really based on the Gemara, how do you understand this? I'm not talking now about Tosfos. The issue, we'll discuss that separately. We're just focusing on this Mishnah, that's all. What's this machlokus between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda about Rosh Hashanah? Let's just talk about Rosh Hashanah as to whether it should be Pashut or Kafuf. But obviously they mean something, right? Now Rashi explains it, and as you got into the Gemara, Rashi is even more elaborate. He tells you more about, this was really important. I don't know if you can, who can tell me? You can use also the Rashi's on the Gemara to help. What is the difference in terms of, take the Tanakhama, why did Tanakhama think, start with Rosh Hashanah, why a Pashut is somehow preferred? A horn that is straight, like a trumpet, just straight. No, Rashi tells you. Well, the Gemara itself also said some words, comma what? De Pashut Inish Date, Tfe Male. What is that? I mean, what are the, if a man straightens out his dog, it doesn't sound coherent. What does that mean? What did Rashi say? Rashi said something really interesting. I don't know if you picked up on it. Yeah, what did Rashi?
The posture of Spira.
Yes. And what is the posture?
So that's the Mechugat. Whether you should daven like that or like.
And where do we know that? Is that?
Sukim.
Yeah, in this Machlokus, does anybody know? Is it based on the Gemara here or it's based on another Gemara somewhere? Did Rashi tell you where it's from? I believe it's in Yuma. Yuma or Erev. Does Rashi say where it is? What? I think it's in Yuma or it might be Erevin. I can't remember now. There's a mach, not here, but Rashi is referring to that Gemara. There's a machlokus in the Gemara. I want someone to find it. You can use a Bar Ilan search. Just find out where, which Gemara, and look it up. Where there's a machlokus in the Gemara about when we daven, forget about Rosh Hashanah, any day of the year when we daven, how should we be standing? And what should be our physical posture? One opinion says you should be straight like a board. Another opinion says you should be hunched over. Where did these two opinions come from? Each opinion relied on a pasuk. And Rashi here quotes the psukim. Now the pasuk that indicates, that supports the notion that what? That it should be straight. What was the pasuk? Nisa levaveinu el kapayim. Of course, it's more metaphorical, talking about the heart. We raise our hearts to heaven, so as though you're looking up, so you're straight. So that would be a pasuk to support the notion that when we stand in tefillah, we should supposed to be straight, like a board. Well, and the view that said, no, you should be hunched over. Ain I v'li bisham. Where does sham mean? Where's sham? Down below, like on the earth. So you're supposed to look down. Like God is saying, he's looking down. So we should look down. So this is a machlokas. Nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah, nothing to do with the shofar. This is just talking about how people should be standing, their position, their posture when they're davening. And actually, how do we paskin?
Down.
We sort of make a compromise. Our body is sort of straight, but we sort of put our head down a little. So we try to accommodate both shitas. We don't just go like, we don't hunch over. We sort of stand straight, but we try to look downward. So that's actually a pshara between the two opposing shitas. Okay. Now, what do you see from what's going on here? So now we have a machlokas about what? Now talk about shofar. So now the machlokas in the Mishnah as to whether the shofar shel Rosh Hashanah should be pashut or kafuf is exactly parallel to the machlokas in this other Gemara about how a person should be standing when he davens. Isn't that right? No? So tell me, what does this say about a shofar? What does a shofar represent? Say it, you're right, but say even more.
A person
davening. The shofar is personified as a person. Isn't that what's happening? So just as a person, how he's supposed to be positioned, you know, is debated. So the same debate is here. So one opinion thinks that the shofar is like a person. Imagine the shofar is a person. And the person is davening. So should it be straight or should it be curved? Now, and this is the whole machlokas. What do you see from now? Think about what we discussed yesterday. I just can't hear you. I'm sorry. Yeah. About Zikaron, Kibifnim Dami. Remember, we were struggling. Well, what does that mean? Now, the Rav gave a beautiful shir. I've heard it many times. About what is the purpose of shofar. Like there's a famous Rambam. I can tell you where it is. Does anybody know the famous Rambam? What is the motif of, what is the objective of shofar? Exactly. It's to arouse us, to stir us up to do tshuva. It's like you hear the sound of the shofar, it's to wake us up. Wake us up from our slumber. Wake us up for what purpose? To do tshuva. For the aseres who made tshuva. That's what the Rambam says the purpose of. So the Rav developed a whole different approach based on this Gemara right here and based on these Rashis, that's not what shofar is. Shofar is a form of tefillah. You see it from this Gemara. And the Rav explained, because this is based on other things, that when somebody is omed b'tefillah, it's as if he's omed lifnei Hashem. Right? So that's why, if you're omed lifnei Hashem, that's why the Gemara said on the previous Amud that it's kibifnim dami. It's like in the Kodesh Kodashim, because when you're omed lifnei Hashem, it's like you're standing. That's our Mesorah, that's our Emunah, that when you stand b'shmon Esrei, you're like omed lifnei Hashem. We don't have intermediaries between us. So that's the special quality of the shofar, that it's lezikaron, it's kibifnim dami, because it's tefillah. But what's unique about it is it's not a tefillah of words, but it's a tefillah of sounds. The Rav gave a whole, all right, just I'll tell you, he said that, can anybody think of, I'm just digressing, never. Then again, why should the tefillah of Rosh Hashanah, which is this is the one mitzvah that we have? Someone mentioned about it's essential. Yeah, it's essential. So why should the essential mitzvah be a one of sounds? I mean, to me, if I went to the daven, I'd like to say something. What say sounds? What kind of? Is that a way to express tefillah? So, you want
to
say something?
Maybe in some way.
It's true, you're right. Anything else? I agree with that. Yeah, words by definition are limiting. Like, you know, you can't, how do we praise God? No matter what you say, you can't do justice. So sometimes not saying anything might be better than trying to express, because whatever we say is limited. I agree. There's also something else that could be said, yes?
It is also about kind of the unity of the community, and that we all make what, the same sounds throughout history and all of the kind of around, and that when we're davening for our lives, we don't want to be pinning it on, you know, ourselves and our own words. Rather, we want to join together.
So couldn't we join together and have a communal tefillah that we all say, but words?
I mean, I guess in some ways I feel like it transcends that, and, you know, the shofar on Har Sinai and the Shema Yisrael types of concepts that we use sound in a lot of ways to transmit, you know, historical and so on.
Okay, but the Rav suggested, I think he said something what Talia was saying along the same, one thing he said is sometimes when you say things, you don't know what to say, and you might have saying the wrong things. Similar to what Talia said, that what we say is limited, but that wasn't the main thing. But then he said something which I thought was really very, very insightful, is that it's the Yom HaDin, so, and the Yom HaDin, we should be scared. Do you ever imagine, why is it when people are truly frightened, they can't speak? They get all choked up. And the most maybe you could do is just sort of give out a scream, give out a cry. That we get so...
Because, like, your cognitive abilities are suspended.
Yeah. So what we do is we sort of regress. And all we can do is, like a baby... Now, does anybody know the sounds that's later in the Gemara are like either moaning sounds or wailing sounds? Because we regress to like infancy, and that all we can do is just like sort of give out a scream. So that's what I thought was a beautiful thought. That's what he said was. But basically what you see from really, and you see it from this Gemara, this is not Stam, you know, that's Pshat, that's the, what else can you say? That is the Pshat in the Gemara here. Okay, so we have this machlokes. Did anybody realize, I mean, pick up on that? Or sort of? Okay, I mean, okay. So we have this machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda about what is, should it be kafuf or pashut? But then there's also a machlokus about Yovel. Because the Tanakhama thought that whatever is true for Rosh Hashanah should be true for Yovel. And Rabbi Yehuda said, not necessarily, right? So that depends on what?
If you hold by a
Gzera Shava. Rashi made mention of a Gzera Shava. So the Tanakhama thinks that we do. And Rabbi Yehuda said no. Now, why did Rabbi Yehuda say no? Because after all, I would imagine he used the Gzera Shava maybe for other things. I mean, what sounds did he make? Did he make the same sounds on Yom Kippur? Did he believe that you make the same sounds on Yom Kippur that you make on Rosh Hashanah? I imagine yes. Did he say Malchus, Achronos, and Shofros? I imagine yes. So, but the one thing, that he doesn't want to use the Gzera Shava for what? For whether it should be, you know, that it should be Pashut versus Kafa. For that, he didn't want to use it. Well, what, is he stubborn? Why didn't he want to use it? Rashi explains it. What did Rashi say, yeah?
So So he compares that the shofar for Rosh Hashanah to that of Yekidah, when Abraham was bent over before, he like bent himself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whereas the shape of the shofar for Yovel should be pashut because it was like just simply letting the slave spring.
Yeah, Rashi says that on Lesiman Shiluach Avodim Vahashmatas Mechira Sados, that what happened on the Yovel year is that slaves were freed and that lands that were sold were returned to the original owner. So, and has nothing to do with Nos Rashi says, Lo Litfilo Velo Lizikaron, that the shofar on Yovel has nothing to do with Zikaron, has nothing to do with Tefillah, a totally different concept. So it would be inappropriate to say that whatever is true for Rosh... Now, if you believe, let's say, that for Tefillah it should be Kafuf, to say that therefore it should be Kafuf on Yovel makes no sense, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Yom Kippur has a totally different idea. It has nothing to do with Tefillah, nothing to do with Zikaron, nothing to do with davening. Well, it has to do with freeing slaves. So in Rabbi Yehuda's mind, it would make more sense that it should be Pashut. Like bent over, hunched over is something, you know, is very humbling. Here we're freeing slaves, we're giving back lands. So Rabbi Yehuda thought that in this regard we should not make the Gzeirah Shavah. Isn't that right? Okay. And the Tanna Kamma felt, no, that we should make the Gzeirah Shavah. Now, it could be that maybe he didn't have a problem with the Gzeirah Shavah because even though, let's say, the concepts are different, but using a straight shofar, which Tanna Kamma thought should be for Rosh Hashanah, would not be, you know, bizarre if you used a straight shofar for Yom Kippur. So it was okay for him. I'm just saying, I don't know. Maybe that's why he didn't have a problem in applying the Gzeirah Shavah. Okay. And then, now then the Gemara cites Rav Levi, who said, Mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah shel Yom HaKippurim b'kfufin v'shel kol hashana b'pshutin. What does shel kol hashana mean? What? Taniyos. So here, Rav Levi, what's he doing? Who's Rav Levi? What is he? A Tana, an Amora? Who is he? He's an Amora. So what? He's not paskening like, not like the Tana Kama, and not like Rabbi Yehuda, because he's saying that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the same, which is what the Tana Kama said, but Tana Kama said it should be Pashut, and Rav Levi is saying it should be Kafuf. So how did the Gemara... So what did the Gemara say about this? I mean... So basically, how do you understand Rav Levi? Just what did he do here? I mean, the Gemara sort of lets us know. Basically, how did he paskin?
Like
Rabbi Yehuda.
He just felt that the Gzeirah Shavah.
But he just felt that with respect to the Gzeirah Shavah, he wanted to maintain the Gzeirah Shavah throughout, just as. You know, the types of sounds, the brachos are all the same based on the Gzeirah Shavah, so he didn't want to distinguish. So therefore, even on Yom Kippur, even though it's Yovel, it's Shiluach Avodim, etc., and all that, he maintained that it should be Kfufin. And the Gemara, here's where the Gemara then said, later, further down, B'maikon Miflugi, the B'maikon Miflugi is going on what? What's the machlokas between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda? And this is where the Kamma de Kayef Inish, Tvei Male, or Kamma de Poshet Inish, and here's where Rashi really explains to us, based on the different psukim. Okay? Now, so here, Tosfos you tell me. Can somebody tell me what Tosfos says? What is bothering Tosfos? What's bothering Tosis? Yeah, who can tell me? What's bothering Tosis? Okay. Ariella, what's bothering Tosis?
We discuss this whether it's one big machlokas.
When you say one, what are you referring to? What is one big machlokas?
As far as like the mishnas, in other words, like if it's one big machlokas that. Or if it's like two separate ones.
Okay, we have two Mishnayos, the one on Chavav Amud Aleph and now this one. And they all seem to talk about what you should use for Rosh Hashanah. Let's just talk about Rosh Hashanah. What you should use for Rosh Hashanah. Now the Tanakhama, now the Mishnah on Chavav Amud Beis, which is a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosei. What's that machlokas about? Tanakhama says you can use any shofar you want except for a parah. And Rabbi Yosei says you can even use a parah. So that sounds like anything goes. Does it matter whether Pashut, Kafuf, does any of that matter? No, doesn't matter. According to these Chachamim, as long as it's not a Parah, you're okay. Isn't that right? And according to Rabbi Yosei, you can use anything you want, even a Parah. And then we come to Chavav Amud Beis, and now we're finding out that somebody wanted, just talking about Rosh Hashanah, one opinion says it's got to be Pashut. That's the Tanakhama. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's got to be Kafuf. So the question is, are these two Mishnayos, is it just basically one big machlokes that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when he was Masada the Mishnah, just put them into one Mishnah after the other? But basically, we could put the two Mishnayos together and say we have this big machlokes about what type of shofar should we be using for Rosh Hashanah. Which would make, so then if that were so, then how many shitos are there? Four. The Tanakhama of Rabbi Yosei believes kafuf, pashut, is all kosher. Any animal that's hollow, you know, the way we discussed it, whether it's pashut or kafuf is kosher, except if it's a para. And Rabbi Yosei says, no, even a para. So according to Rabbi Yosei, I don't care what pashut, kafuf, behema, chaya, it doesn't matter. They're all kosher. All kosher. And then you come to the next Mishnah where you have the Tanakhama saying that no, it's got to be Pashut. It's got to be Pashut. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's got to be Kafuf. Now, if you view that it's all one big machlokas, that would imply then, take the second Mishnah, that means according to the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yehuda, it says it's got to be Pashut. So what would the Tanakhama say if I took a shofar that was kafuf? Am I yotzei the mitzvah or not? If I say this is one big machlokas spanning two, then you're not yotzei. And likewise, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I took a shofar that's pashut for Rosh Hashanah, you're not yotzei. That is one way to look at these two Mishnayos. What was the other way? What was the other way? Yeah? What was the other way?
If like the first Mishnah was like, you know, what's really like mitzvah? In other words, like,
don't use the word mitzvah because it's okay. We're gonna get confused. So, try to say in English.
The second Mishnah is talking about whether once, in other words, the first Mishnah is talking about like the actual fulfillment of the mitzvah, and then the second, like the mitzvah blowing the shofar, and then the second mishnah is talking about like additional, like, you know, if it's better to do this or better to do that.
Okay, so let me repeat that. The other way to look at this is that the two mishnayos, these are two separate machlokas and going on. One machlokas has nothing to do with the other one. What do I mean? That the first mishnah is talking about which shofros are kosher for the mitzvah and which ones are actually pasul. And if I say it's pasul, that means if you used it, you would not be yotzei the mitzvah. That's what the first mishnah is about, and that basically Tanakhama is saying all shofros are kosher, except for one, except if it's of a parah. And Rabbi Yosef says, no, all shofars are kosher. Kosher, I mean that if you used it, you'd be yotzei. If I say to you it's pasul, that means if you used it, you're not yotzei. Right? That's the first mishnah. Second mishnah is not discussing whether it's pasul versus kosher. The second mishnah agrees that they're all kosher. But what? But what kind of a machlokas is? It's a machlokas in hidur mitzvah. Like, you know, like in Chanukah, Mahadrim and a Mahadrim, like Beisham and Beisilo, everybody would agree that the basic mitzvah is Ner Ishu Beiso, right? But as far as Hidur Mitzvah, we have different opinions. Beisham and Beisilo, right? Same thing here. It's a machlokas in Hidur Mitzvah. Like, what is a preferred way to be Mekayim the mitzvah? So the Tanakhama says for Rosh Hashanah, you know what is preferred? If the shofar is pashut, for the reasons that we discussed before. And Rabbi Yehuda believes that for hiddur mitzvah, the ideal would be if the shofar is kafuf. This would be another way to look at it. Now, I want you to tell me, why would one learn the first way, and why would one learn the second way? I mean, it's like up for grabs, where you toss a coin, or there are reasons why you would think that the first way of learning, that's one big machlokas, makes more sense, or the second way of learning makes more sense. Who could do it? This is where you had to... So somebody take the first way, and then somebody take the second way. You want to take the first way? You can do anything you want.
So I'll
do Tosfos.
So Tosfos says in the end that...
I'm not asking about the end. I'm asking you what would be if you think that the first way of learning is the correct way, that it's just all one big machlokas, what would drive a person to say that? That's what I want to know. Why would you think that way? It shouldn't be arbitrary, right? It shouldn't be just tossing a coin. There should be a reason why somebody would think that way.
It's because of Gezeirah Shavah.
Can you explain what do you mean? What does Gezeirah Shavah have to do with it?
So, it doesn't necessarily make sense that just because the attitude of prayer in Rosh Hashanah is kafuf, then you should extrapolate that onto yoga. But if it's really part of the actual mitzvah, then it makes sense that would transfer along with the Gezeirah Shavah to yoga. But if it's just a hidden mitzvah, then there's no reason to transfer it along with the Gezeirah Shavah. So since you're passing like Rabbi Levi that, as in the conclusion of Rabbi Levi, who says that we do apply the Gezeirah Shavah and it should be kafuf both on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur, we see that it's mi'ikra din, or else it wouldn't, because Hidur wouldn't.
Hear what she's saying. Can you read me in Tosfos where Tosfos says that?
Yeah.
Just the part what you just said. Just tell everybody where it is.
From the line stretches Shel's clarion.
Yeah. Everybody see that? It's right below Rabbeinu Chananel's perush, at the bottom, right? Yeah, go ahead, read that. Yeah, see what he's saying? That if it wasn't one big machlokas, if it was really two separate machlokasin, and that the second machlokas is just about hidur mitzvah, then says Tosfos, it doesn't make much sense that we should apply a gzeira shava, even though the themes of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim Shel Yovel are so drastically different. What do you mean? For hidur mitzvah, you're going to require whatever. Let's say if you need kafuf on Rosh Hashanah, that you're going to therefore, if it's only a din of hidur mitzvah, you're going to say, no, and you got to have kafuf for Yom Kippur, even though it makes no sense, at least at first, right? I would say if you're interested in Hiddur Mitzvah, then use Pashut on Yom Kippur. That would be a bigger Hiddur than to use a Kafuf. So therefore, the fact that the Gzeirah Shavah is applied sounds like that, no, we're not discussing Hiddur Mitzvah, we're actually discussing what is Kasher, what is Pasul. And if that's the case, then the Gzeirah Shavah is telling us that you must apply, you know, whatever rules you have for Rosh Hashanah, you apply to Yom Kippur. So this, for this reason, that's why, that would be a reason to explain that what? That the two Mishnayos are really, both two Mishnayos are connected, and they're all, and both Mishnayos are expressing one big machlokas involving four opinions. And they're all ma'akev. That if you don't do it their way, each one's way, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. What would be, now someone else take the other opinion. Why would one think that the two Mishnayos are not one big machlokas, but it's rather two separate machlokas? And the first machlokas is really about pasul versus kosher, whether you're yotzei or you're not yotzei. And the second machlokas is really about just hiddur mitzvah. Who can do it? Did somebody else do it? Alyssa, where's Alyssa? I can't remember, but who's Alyssa? Okay, hi.
So, I don't know, you didn't get this far.
You didn't get this far in. Who can try? Tamar, where's Tamar? Hi.
Towards the beginning of the
toast. Just in your own words, what reason would one give?
Well, if you say that the reason to blow the shofar kafuf is to be master to the sixth.
Okay. Or just to elaborate on that, one thing he says, what this whole notion kafuf versus pashut, he says, what is that? Like he says, the Torah doesn't talk about it. All the Torah says, tavir shofar, which is by Yom Kippur that we apply to Rosh Hashanah. Tavir shofar b'chol artzachem. And shofar is a shofar. Wait. Why should it matter? Kafuf, not kafuf. What other indications were there to Tosfos that it's two separate machlokasim? The language of Rav Levi, remember, it says mitzvah.
That was kind of hard.
Is mitzvah? Yeah, because you have to know how they use it. When you say it's a mitzvah, of course a mitzvah. Who else, what are we talking about? We're not talking about mitzvahs here. So what do they, when he says mitzvah, what do you mean by the word mitzvah? What, you thought we were talking about chulin? What? Obviously the word mitzvah is being used in a certain way. In what way? Like hiddur mitzvah. I think it's true. I think it does sound that way. Like it's a mitzvah, like it's a really the nicest way to do it. Like the Mahadrim and a Mahadrim, this is the nice, this is. And also the way the Mishnayos are set up, like it's two separate Mishnayos. It's like, you know, as if one didn't know about the other one. And so therefore, that would be a way to say that no, that it's two separate machlokas, and one has nothing to do with the other. The first mission, as we said before, is about are you yotzei versus not being yotzei. Machlokas chachamim and Rabbi Yosi about the para. Second mission is about hiddur mitzvah. What is the best way to be makayim the mitzvah? And what did Tosis therefore? And how did Tosis conclude at the very end? Which way does he want to learn? That what? That it's really two separate machlokas and or one big machlokas? It's one big machlokas. And therefore, if we paskin like Rav Levi, which we do, that means the shofar of Rosh Hashanah must be kafuf. And if you take a shofar that's pashut, you're not yotzei. That's how Tosfos learns. Now the Ron, yeah.
I have a question just in terms of how Gezeirah Shavah works.
Okay.
Does Gezeirah Shavah always have to apply across the board, or like tonight I'm going to choose to apply different aspects?
You know, I don't know so well because I have to look. You have to look at every single gzera shava, but unless it's totally incomprehensible, that makes absolutely no sense to apply what's at A to B, I would think that it would be across the board.
Except for here, we just suggested that Rabbi Yehuda.
But Rabbi Yehuda didn't.
Right.
Yeah. So obviously, there's no one way to look at this. Also, there's something else about a gzera shava. I don't know if you know this, that you're not supposed to, the Gemara says that a person can't really make his own gzeirah shava. Has to be a mesorah from your Rebbe, and the Rebbe got it from his Rebbe. So I would think that if that's the case, that in the mesorah itself, it probably would also have told you what is it that you're extracting, that you're, you know, learning out through the gzeirah shava. That might have been part. So then it sounds like to hear is what they knew there was a gzera shava, they had a mesorah, but Rabbi Yehuda thought that the gzera shava did not apply to the shape of the shofar, and the Tanakhama had this gzera shava, and he thought that it does apply. What he got it from his Rebbe that it applied, and Rabbi Yehuda got it from his Rebbe that it didn't apply. It's a hard thing to, you know what I'm saying? This is always something that bothered me when you have a machlokus about a gzera shava. If it's based on a mesorah, what do you mean that different mesorahs, you know? See, all the other darche halimud of making drushos, like kal v'chomer, klal v'prado klal, all these other things, this actually is a machlokas rishonim, but many rishonim think that you can do that yourself. You don't have to have a mesorah for that. Some rishonim believe that you have to have a mesorah for everything except one. Does anybody know which one? That you could do by yourself, you don't have to have a mesorah. Kal v'chomer, yeah. So this is but everybody agrees that gzera shava, you have to have a mesorah. You can't just come and look at a chumash and see a commonality between two sections. Say, oh, I got a great idea, I can make gzera shava. No. Anyway, so that's, now the Ran, with whom did the Ran agree? Did he agree with?
Not
like Tosfos. So, but is there something in the Ran that's new that Tosfos doesn't discuss at all? Yeah, what is it?
If the specific animals that are mentioned are dafka.
So what animal do you have?
Ayal or an ayal.
Okay. So what the Ran introduces is, besides the issue of kafuf versus pashut, does it matter what particular animal you use? Meaning, if I believe, let's say, that I need a shofar that should be kafuf, let's say, assuming it's not a para, does it matter what animal I select? All I have to do is look to see if its horns are kafuf and I can use it. It makes no difference whether it's this animal, that animal, it's a ram, it's this, it's that. Or it does matter. So for example, when the Mishnah said, take the Tanakhama that said, shel Yael Pashut, what is the main, is it the fact that you got to get a Yael, which happens to be Pashut? Or the Yael is lav dafka. I mean, that's just the example the Mishnah used, but what the Mishnah really wants to tell you is that it's got to be a pashut. And for example, like, you know, a Yael, its horns are pashut. I don't really care about the Yael, I care about that it's pashut. So which is it? What did the Ran say? Yeah, what did the Ran say? Joel, get to the Ran. Where's the Ran? Yeah, so what did the Ran? Talk about the Mishnah, this Mishnah. Just focus on this Mishnah, where they said, like for example, the Tanakhama talked about a Yael Pashut, and what did Rabbi Yehuda talk about? Token Bishel Zacharim. Zacharim. Now Zacharim means, yeah, that, now did Rashi actually say, tell you what it meant?
Yeah.
He did say that it means an ayal, a ram.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find it. Where did he say? He said it.
Yeah, b'shal zecharim. Is he in
Shas? Where are you? I just. Oh, elim, right. B'shal zecharim. So Rashi says elim. That's all rams. Shestaman kfufin. Now, so the question is the ram, the fact that it's a ram, is that vital? Or is what's vital is that it should be kafuf. So what did the Ran feel? Based on this Mishnah.
He says it's not essential. He makes different kind of layers of what is essential.
So based on this Mishnah, what's essential is either you believe that it should be kafuf or you believe that it should be pashut. Isn't that right? Whether you use a Yael for the Pashut opinion or you use some other animal, it doesn't matter. There's no special hiddur to use a Yael.
There is a special hiddur to use an Ayel.
Now, but that, so what about an Ayel? So where did that come from? I just can't hear you. And who mentioned that? What? There's a Gemara, right? He quotes it, no?
Yeah.
Earlier in Rosh Hashanah, what, Daf Tes Zayin, Tes Vav or something? Do they give you the Daf?
Yeah.
Remember that's what it says there, that why do we blow a shofar shel ayil of a ram in order to remember Akedas Yitzchak? That God should have Rachmanis on us, and so on. That's where the Gemara talks about an ayil. So according to the Ran, how many levels of kiyum are there? How would you even say it? I'm asked about language. How would you say it? I want good language here, yeah?
He says that there are three levels.
Yeah, but give me good language for each level. Okay, one level is, are you Yotze or are you not Yotze? That's like the rock bottom. That's the, and that, and what will determine that? Right. Is it a para or is it not a para? If it's a para, you're not Yotze. I'm assuming according to, let's say, the Chachamim, not Rabbi Yotze. If it's not a para, and of course it's hollow, it's not just the bone, right, because that's excluded anyway. And if it's hollow, right, and it's not a para, the rock, the bottom line is you're Yotze the mitzvah. Isn't that right? Fine. That's what's the next level? Okay, I would use the word lechatchila. That lechatchila, and what would be the lechatchila? Let's say if you hold that it should be, let's say, Rev Levi or Rabbi Yehuda, so lechatchila, it should be kafuf. But in the lechatchila, does it matter which animal? No. So that means if I took not a ram, I took some other animal, but it was kafuf. According to Rav Levi and Rabbi Yehuda, I am Yotze the mitzvah lechatchila. This is, it's a mitzvah, it's lechatchila. And then what? Yeah. And then you have a mitzvah min amufchar. And what's the mitzvah min amufchar? An ayil. To me, it's exactly like Hanukkah. You have mitzvah, mahadrin, and then mahadrin and a mahadrin. It's so interesting. So we see that there is such a thing as having different layers, different levels of kiyum. You know, the basic lechatchila. There's a mitzvah, and then you have the mitzvah and a mufcha. So this is basically what. So therefore, according to this approach. This approach is against Tosfos, and that b'di'evit you could use any shofar you want, straight or curved, as long as it's not a para. Isn't that right? Lechatchila, as a mitzvah lechatchila, you should use kafuf, and the mitzvah and a mufchar is to use an ayil. Now, according to Tosfos, what does Tosfos mention at all ayil? In this Tosfos, did he mention at all? Was there any emphasis on ayil, or the only emphasis was on kafuf? Yeah, so that's why it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. Because at the very end, what does he say? Kafuf. So I don't know if he, you know, lahalach, if he feels that it's a mitzvah min hamuvchar to use an ayam. I don't know. Now the one sheet that the Ran quotes it, which really stands out the most, is the Shitas HaRambam. The Ran quoted it, if you look it up, it's one line, it's, is there a Rambam here? Let's just read it. It's right behind you, but yeah. Isn't that a Rambam? I'll just read it to you. Thanks. It's in Hilchos Shofar, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph. Here it is. Mitzvah Saseh Shal Torah Lishmoa Truas HaShofar Barosh Hashanah Shenemar Yom Truah Yelochem. Listen now. V'shofar Shetoken Bo Bein Barosh Hashanah Bein B'Yovel Hu Keren HaKavosim. It's the horn of sheep, which is the aisle. HaKafuf. It should be the horn of sheep that is curved. V'chol hashofros psulin chutz mikeren hakeves. And any other shofar is possible except the horn of a sheep. It's a male sheep. And right there on the spot, the Ravid says, Amar Avram, Hifriz al midosov. The Rambam went too far. Ela mitzvah bekfufin. V'imtaka b'shal yael yotza. What does that mean?
You use a pashut one
earlier. Yeah. It's a mitzvah to use kfufin, but if you use, let's say, the horn of a yael, he uses that example, which we know is pashut.
So
you could be yotza.
Even, and goes straight to the Ran.
Well, he doesn't have to go to anybody. He's got
right.
Himself.
No, but he said the Rambam went too far, but not only a little bit too far. He went way too far because not only can you be not yotze with the Rambam says not only can you not be yotze with any kafuf, but you need specifically an aisle. So the Ravid
goes the other way.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. You can use a parshut. You can be yotze with a parshut. Doesn't have to be kafuf. You don't need an aisle. Yeah, he agrees that maybe like the Ran, he would say maybe the same thing that. L'chatchila, mitzvah min hamuvchar, etc., to use kafuf, to use an ayah, but as far as whether you're yotze or not, you could be yotze with a yah, with a pasha. Obviously, today, you know, we all use, of course, a shofar from a ram, and they're all curved, because basically it's certainly out of deference to the Shitas HaRambam, who actually says that if you don't use it, you're not yotze the mitzvah. But even without that, we know that it's a mitzvah min hamuvchar, you know, according to the Ran at least, to use an ayil, which of course is kafuf. Then the very end of the Ran, if you haven't done it, take a look. He raises a very interesting issue. Can somebody, the last four lines of the Ran, did everyone get to it? No? Okay, let's have somebody read it. Let's see. Aviva, you want to read it? Do you have it?
Yeah.
Just loud.
Okay.
Can you see what that means? What does that mean? When you said the Bei Matara, what do you mean by that?
Something like
that's kosher. Yeah. A kosher animal. It means kosher teeth, that's not treif. Now here they're using the word tahar and tame not to get confused. A behema tameya is also like a treif animal. Not that it's macabre, not interesting, not necessarily because you get tame if you touch it. When they say a behema tameya, it means like a chazer is a behema tameya. The Torah calls it that. So the question now is, can you use a horn from an animal that's not a para, but it's a trefa animal? It's a behemoth. What?
Are aisles kosher?
Of course they are. It's a sheep. It's a sheep.
Lamb chops.
Yeah, lamb chops. As a child, that's all I ate. My mother told me I refused to eat anything but lamb chops. breakfast, lunch, and supper, all ate was lamb chops. So this is the kasha, this is what the Ran raises, the question of what? Of, should the Karen, should the shofar come from a behemoth tahora, or is it okay if it comes from a behemoth tamea? And he quotes a Gemara. What's the issue? Because there's a statement in the Gemara. Keep reading. Period. There's such a statement in the Gemara in Shabbos by Menachem Lekin that says Lo hukshru lemlecha shamayim ela behema tahora bilvad. Sounds very very clear that anything that you want to use for melecha shamayim, if an animal is needed, obviously, it should be a behema tahora. Keep reading. Little louder. Which means?
In shofar, it's a melech shemayim, like we see above, that because it comes to the zikaron, it's as if like it's the avodah that was near.
Which is kind of interesting. You notice he doesn't say it's melech shemayim because it's a mitzvah to blow shofar. Why not just say it's a mitzvah? He doesn't do that. He says, because it's Lizikaron, it's Kilifnim. I keep going. Does anybody know what this thing about the tachash? Do you know what was going on there?
Maybe the tachash isn't a tachash.
What? First of all, just what
it's
was?
Multi-strike.
But what was it for? What?
The
Torah says that they used the skins of this animal called the tachash. What? Well, that was the question. They didn't know what it was. The Gemara discusses, we're not sure what kind of an animal, but what did they do with the skins of this tachash? They used it as the roof, the Mishkan in the Midbar. They used it as a covering, as part of the roof of the Mishkan. And the question was, you know, whether this tachash was a kosher animal, or was it a behemoth tahor, or was it a behemoth tameo? And so now, so the question is, why are they having such doubts about it? I mean, after all, they used it for the Mishkan, and if there's a principle that says lo hukshru l'mlecha shemayim lo behemoth tahor bilvad, well, doesn't that then seem to imply that it must have been a behemoth tahora, otherwise they wouldn't have used it, if there is such a concept? Now, did the Gemara say that? It's Gemara by Memadlikin. The Gemara did not. The Gemara felt that maybe this principle of lo hukshu umlecha shemayim el behemoth tahora b'vav, maybe that doesn't apply to the oros that they used to cover the Mishkan with. You had to look up the Gemara. To what did they think it applied to? No, well, no, like tefillin. That the ritzuos, Gemara talk. Look up the Gemara that the ritzuos, you know, the straps of the tefillin, they're skins, right? From what animal? Did it have to come from a kosher animal or a trefa animal? So the Gemara there said, maybe that's what this principle of lo hutru l'mlecha shemayim el behemah tahor b'lvad is coming to teach us about the ritzuos of the tefillin, but not, not necessarily about what this tachash was. And that's why the Gemara at the end asked, my havi Allah, the Gemara there asked, which, what does that mean, my havi Allah? So what about this? What about what? So what is this tachash after all? Is it kosher or treif? Mark goes on to try to tell us which way it was. But the Gemara didn't use what? This principle of lohutru lo hukshur lemlecha shemayim el behemah tahor bavad, to explain to us that the tachash must have been a behemah tahora. Well, if that's the case, so maybe we can't use it either for what? For the shofar. So therefore, hadavar tzarech iyun. So, I don't really know, I don't understand well. I have to work on this some more. Like, so okay, so what is the issue, even by tachash too, whether it should or it shouldn't be, that the Gemara thought that tefillin, the ritzuos of the tefillin, that's what this, what's special about the ritzuos of tefillin, that that should come under that principle, but maybe the oros of a tachash do not, and maybe a shofar doesn't. I don't know what. And you notice what bothered me also was the fact that, as I pointed out before, they're not just saying because shofar is a mitzvah. They mention the fact that it's something special. It's kilif nimdami. It's not just like a lulav and esrog. Of course, lulav and esrog doesn't come from an animal, so that issue never comes up. But shofar is special. So but I don't know. Okay, so it's special. So whether it should or should not come under that requirement of behemah tahorah bavad, like the ritzuos of tefillin do, whether it should or it shouldn't, I don't know. Just not by tachash, I don't know. Because tachash, what's not part of the avoda? Maybe that's it. It's just the roof. And shofar is, you can say it's tefillah, it's avoda. And maybe that could be it. You know, it's more, because you're talking about davening, that's the avoda that we do. It's not like the roof. The roof is just part of the structure. It's not part of the avoda itself. You know, perhaps that would be a way to analyze it. Okay. I don't think, is there anything else that we needed to, in the sugya that we need? So we have time, so we don't have time. Oh, we just finished. It's 12 o'clock. So I'm going to give you new Mara Makamas. We're going to move ahead. Now, if anyone started, the next piece of Gemara, we're just going to do the first half. I'm going to just tell you right away. On Chav Zayin Amad Aleph, just to continue until the middle of the Amud, until we see where the lines start to get wider. The first wide line at the two dots, stop there. And then we're going to skip to the next Mishnah, which is at the bottom of the Amud. And this, the next Mishnah, that's really much more meaty. We're really going to get into very, there's a Balamor, there's a Rif, there's a Mulchamis, it's a lot of, there's a Rashi, Tosfos, it's a very involved sugya. Okay, but I'll give you the Mara Makamos Monday morning, okay? Okay. We have to shut this thing off.